It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me. This morning, I'm going to start off with a story that I started to read a few weeks ago and ran out of time. I barely got started, and a number of you said, hey, what about that story you started? So I'm going to start off with the story that I think is just kind of one of those neat, really neat stories that you come upon from time to time. It happened every Friday evening, almost without fail, when the sun resembled a giant orange and was starting to dip into the blue ocean. Old Ed came strolling along the beach to his favorite pier. Clutched in his bony hand was a bucket of shrimp. Ed walked out to the end of the pier, where it seems he almost has the world to himself. The glow of the sun is a golden bronze now. Everybody's gone, except for a few joggers on the beach. Standing out at the end of the pier, Ed is alone with his thoughts and his bucket of shrimp. Before long, however, he is no longer alone. Up in the sky, a thousand white dots come screeching and squawking, winging their way toward that lanky frame standing there on the end of the pier. Before long, dozens of seagulls have enveloped him, their wings fluttering and flapping wildly. Ed stands there, tossing shrimp to the hungry birds. As he does, if you listen closely, you can hear him say with a smile, "Thank you, thank you." In a few short minutes, the bucket is empty. But Ed doesn't leave. He stands there lost in thought, as though transported to another time and place. When he finally turns around and begins to walk back towards the beach, a few of the birds hop along the pier with him until he gets up to the stairs, and then they too fly away. And old Ed quietly makes his way down to the end of the beach and on home. If you were sitting there at the end of the pier with your fishing line in the water, Ed might seem like some old funny kind of duck, as my dad used to say. Or to onlookers, he's just another old codger, lost in his weird world, feeding the seagulls with a bucket full of shrimp. To the onlooker, rituals can look either very strange or very empty. They can seem altogether unimportant, maybe even a lot of nonsense. Old folks do a lot of strange things, at least in the eyes of boomers and busters. Most of them would probably write old Ed off down there in Florida. That's too bad. They'd do well to know him, know his full name, Eddie Rickenbacker. He was a famous World War I, and then he was in World War II. He was a famous hero in World War I, and he was in World War II. On one of his many flying missions across the Pacific, he and his seven-member crew went down. Miraculously, all of the men survived, crawling out of their plane and climbed onto a life raft. Captain Rickenbacker and his crew floated for days on the rough waters of the Pacific. They fought the sun. They fought sharks. Most of all, they fought hunger and thirst. By the eighth day, their rations had run out. No food, no water. They were hundreds of miles from land, and no one knew where they were or if they were even alive. Every day across America, millions of Americans wondered and prayed that Eddie Rickenbacker might be found alive. The men adrift needed a miracle. That afternoon, they had a simple devoted service and prayed for a miracle. Devotional service and prayed for a miracle. They tried to nap. Eddie leaned back and pulled his military cap over his nose. Time dragged on. All he could hear was the slap of the waves against the raft. Suddenly, Eddie felt something land on the top of his cap. And this is why I'm telling the story. It was a seagull. Old Ed would later describe how he sat perfectly still, planning his next move. With a flash of his hand and a squawk from the gull, he managed to grab it and wring its neck. He tore the feathers off, and he and his starving crew made a meal of it. a very slight meal for 8 men. Then they used the intestines for bait. With it, they caught fish, which gave them food and more bait, and the cycle continued. With that simple survival technique, they were able to endure the rigors of the sea until they were found and rescued after 24 days at sea. Eddie Rickenbacker lived many years beyond that ordeal, but he never forgot the sacrifice of that first life-saving seagull, and he never stopped saying thank you to the seagulls. That's why almost every Friday night, he would walk to the end of the pier with a bucket full of shrimp and a heart full of gratitude. I read this because so often we don't realize how intertwined we are with nature and how often nature has provided us with what we needed to live. I cannot even begin to imagine what Eddie Rickenbacker and those members aboard that raft went through, the sacrifices they made. And yet when I look at birds after seeing this, and particularly seagulls, I realize even birds that we run to scare away. You think of the seagulls on the beach in Chicago, all over the beaches everywhere, following the beaches. A lot of people think that their fecal matter is part of the reason we've had so much E. coli outbreaks. But to one person and to a group of men who were American World War I and World War II heroes, the seagulls saved their lives. So when I read this the other day, it made me think about the seagulls that I shoot in the air over their heads to try to scare them away as they eat fish in farm ponds, and all the harassing I've done of seagulls. And it made me just think of this. And so I thought you might enjoy the story. I believe it's true. I'm reading it from a magazine that I think they thought it was true. Anyway, next time I think of seagulls and I see them, might not be quite so agitated, as I realized that not only to Eddie Rickenbacker, but a lot of people, they've meant a great difference. I'll be back with much more on the Great Outdoors Show in just a moment. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little about tourism in Canada, or lack thereof. And I'm going to also talk about what Kerry Luft and I talked about last week, CRP a little bit, and how maybe, while it's well-intentioned, there's some things they need to clean up. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer, or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you very much for listening. I'm going to talk for a moment about tourism in Canada. Well, actually, there isn't any tourism in Canada, and it's an unbelievable shame that for two summers in a row now, the great outdoors of all of Canada are pretty much locked down, and that includes for Canadians. I was talking with an individual the other day in Kenora, just over the U.S. border, who runs a fabulous fishing camp. They are not even allowed to leave their houses except once a week to go to a grocery store. It's incredible the difference between life in Canada right now and life in basically most of the United States. So for the second year in a row, hundreds, well, actually thousands of fishing camps and outfitters and lodges sit empty. No Americans can come, and Canadians really can't come because they're not allowed to travel. If you're in Ontario, you can't travel to Manitoba, or you can't travel to Saskatchewan. So the loss of revenue is phenomenal, but what about the loss of lifestyle? And so we've got 2 years when great musky lakes or trout rivers or smallmouth bass lakes, they're not seeing any fishermen. When they finally do, it's going to be as though they never, ever saw a fly or a lure before. It'll be pretty spectacular. But the lifestyle that the Canadian waters and woods have brought to generations of Americans who have planned their calendars around taking families and friends and going north, it's a tradition now broken, not just for 1 year, but for 2 years. And the thousands of Americans who own cabins all over the North Country in Canada, along the U.S.-Canadian border and on up through Lake of the Woods and all that country, they can't go either. So I have many, many friends who both have cabins, and many friends, because of my years in the outdoor business, who own lodges or resorts, and they're heartbroken. Their customers have missed 2 years, and there's no guarantee that after 2 years, those customers are going to come flocking back. So they've had to roll over deposits, not for 1 year, but for 2 years. And the Canadian government is certainly giving them a lot of largesse, but as one of them said to me the other day, I don't want the government's money. I want to see my friends from America. I want their money. I want their memories. I want their kids to come. I want their friends to come. So hopefully Canada, it doesn't look like it because it's an absolute train wreck in their handling of COVID. And I, for many of you know, I've gone for almost 40 years, way north to the end of the road up in Manitoba, where there's a little shack that has been a place I've stayed and made memories for 40 years every October or September. Didn't go last year, and I talked to the owner of it the other day, and she said, I don't know that you're coming this year. So it's truly sad. And we've had, there's so many stories about COVID and so many great stories about how it brought family together, so many terrible stories about how it's wrecked lives. And I think of the fabric, the connection between the United States and Canada and our outdoor heritage. It'll come back, but it may take some time. In 2 years, as we've learned, you pick up new habits, you do things, you have new destinations. You literally cannot find a fishing guide in the United States in the lower 48. You can't find a room in any single outfitter or resorts camps. They're all gone, taken. And once those traditions start, they may not be broken. People have made new traditions. And so I know a lot of the lodge owners in Canada said to me, you know, after 2 years, I hope they come back. I hope my friends come. I think we will. But it's really, really sad that Canada has not been able to figure out how to deal with COVID the way the United States has. And I'm not signing blame or anything. It's just a fact. They are way, way behind the eight ball on this. And it's certainly hurting the outdoor heritage and the connectivity between tens of thousands of Americans who love Canada and have gone there for generations now to enjoy the Canadian wilderness, not going again this year. I want to move to something that we have absolutely no control over, and that's the drought. Some of you may be saying, what drought? Well, it appears that we are setting ourselves up for a whopper of a bad, bad year on the prairies of North America. Iowa, western Minnesota, all of the Dakotas, eastern Montana, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, the cradle for 70% of the birds that are produced in North America are as dry as they've been now in 30 years. It's been since the late 1980s that the prairies were this dry. And sometimes there are pockets of great water. And this year it appears, as of my speaking to you right now, there really are no places of great habitat. So this is a natural cycle. Most individuals would tell you they can't believe we have had such a period of extended wet weather. And we by and large have. We've had a few droughts over the past 30 years. It really began to rain. The drought that was so terrible from about 1985 to 1992 ended in July of 1993, when over 10 inches of rain fell across most of the prairies at about a week period and ended the drought. Prior to that, we had 7 or 8 years of just awful, awful drought, and as a result, awful production. But since 1993, when those rains came, by and large, the breeding grounds of North America on the prairies have been in pretty good shape, have actually had its several years of record precipitation. And if it was very dry in one area one year, it wasn't so bad in another area. This is looking a lot like the end of the 1980s, 1988, 89, early 90, 1990, when the prairies were parched. So we'll keep an eye on it. But as of right now, as we head into the middle of May and breeding season is in full swing across the prairies, there's a lot of dust in the air, a lot of dry wetlands. Seasonal wetlands are dry. Semi-permanent wetlands are barely hanging on. It's going to be, unless something changes very quickly, it is going to be a really, really tough year for bird production on the prairies. So I thank you for listening. I did promise you I'd talk about CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program. I'll make that the first thing I talk about next week because I have a thought for the Biden administration. If they want it to be successful, there's just one thing they need to do, which Carrie Luft and I started to talk about last week, and we ran out of time. So next week, I'll talk about the one thing that could really tee it up. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.